Hey everyone, before we jump into today's episode, I did want to take a second to tell you a little bit about our new sponsor, Levity.ai. In freight, time is money and efficiency is key. That's where Levity comes in. Imagine automating your email operations to do more with less effort. Levity connects directly to your inboxes, extracting vital information from emails and attachments in real time. It seamlessly integrates with your TMS, empowering you to quote faster, build loads more efficiently, and book more freight in less time. Whether it's incoming emails from shippers or carriers, Levity's got you covered. It understands any language, any format, and even interprets non-standard formatting. Visit Levity.ai today to sign up and get started.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today. Today will be a somewhat different episode than what you might be used to. Overall, we had our guests cancel last minute due to a family emergency. So we decided to kind of give you the story behind Freight Caviar and Shipper CRM. We are in the midst of relaunching Shipper CRM.
Very exciting.
Overall, I wanted just to kind of dive in and give you kind of a history of how Freight Caviar came to be, how Shipper CRM came to be. Today, I'm joined with Christian Gebbies. He's our co-founder of Freight Caviar. He's the CEO of Shipper CRM. So overall, we'll be discussing the history behind Freight Caviar, which I'll dive into here in a little bit. And then we'll get into Shipper CRM, how that started and how's it going, et cetera. So to begin, basically, this is a story I've told maybe a few times on like some podcasts before, but I've never really done it on our show. And so
how did you actually end up in Ukraine again?
In Ukraine? Well, I'm about to get into that. I have the notes here. So I figured I would go over these notes here real quick. And then once I'm done with that, you could, any questions you might have, you could ask me, but, sure. I wanted to write it down so that I don't forget some stuff, but this is kind of like the gist of it all. Back in 2017, it was November of 2017. I think it was the 11th of November. I flew out of the U.S. and I moved to Kiev, Ukraine to open up a freight brokerage office for Everest Transportation Systems out of Evanston, Illinois. And so I was 24 at the time. I was single. I honestly, when I had the opportunity to move to Ukraine, I jumped on it. I wanted to move right away. This was like just a few months before November
and before the war.
I mean, this was back in 2017. So, I moved out there in 2017. It was November. The market was really hot back then. One of our largest customers were sending us like tons of freight. It was really busy. And so we just started hiring like lots of people from day one. And I was the American sent out to Kiev to kind of manage and build up the office. And it was, I enjoyed it greatly. I was 24, I was young. But yeah, so like within 3 years, we built up the office from 4 people to 100. And during our time there, we always spent a lot of time laughing at like the detention denied memes, the USA transportation memes. Like it showed us that like the BS that we deal with on a daily basis in the industry, everyone else is also dealing with it with you know, all the situations, the funny stuff that happens. I mean, typically the situations aren't funny in themselves, but
they're bizarre that they become
exactly funny. Exactly. So that was definitely like, it was fascinating for me to see like that, like detention denied, like, you know, 15,000 followers on Instagram, USA Transportation, so many more. And like they were showing the industry from a perspective that like was funny. And
how many followers did Bob have at that time, like with USA Transportation? Do you remember?
I have no idea. No, okay. I don't remember. No.
He's got a lot now.
But yeah, so I quit in October of 2020. I quit Everest. This was the middle of the pandemic. I was burnt out by the whole brokerage industry. But, you know, I also wanted to be an owner of a brokerage. I tried to get equity at Everest, you know, it didn't work out. So, you know, when I was dealing with all the stress and with all the issues, I was like, I might as well be dealing with my own company. And so I left in October 2020. And for some reason, the first day I was technically unemployed because I quit, I had an idea come to mind where I was like, okay, I'm just going to start a freight broker meme account. And I'm naming it Shipping Pallets. So this just came out. I was still in Kiev. I went to the gym, and for some reason, you get a lot of great ideas when you go to the gym, by the way. If you start sweating and something might come up. I literally just was like, okay, I'm creating this meme account. This is what I'm going to do. I named it Shipping Pallets because our only customer at the time, because, well, I'm going to take it back. So I left Everest and I opened a brokerage named Bang Bang Freight. the reason why it was called Bang Bang Freight, and a lot of people thought it was really funny, was because we had the top salesman at Everest. Whenever we covered his load in our chat group, he would say Bang Bang. And so for some reason, named it Bang Bang Freight. I opened it with the owner of a trucking company here in Des Plaines, Illinois, who was my relationship carrier at Everest. But so our only customer from the first day were these Amish, it was an Amish shipper from Ohio that would refurbish pallets. So we would bring them old pallets. They would refurbish it and then we would ship them out. So I named the account Shipping Pallets. and I told myself that first day that I'll have 10,000 followers on Instagram within 10 months. That was like the goal. I needed to get it. So I just started posting like the worst, stupidest memes imaginable in the beginning.
How close did you get to 10,000 in that first month?
It was 10,000 within 10 months.
Oh, within 10 months.
Okay. Within 10 months. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure how many followers I had the first month, but I did have 10,000 followers within 10 months.
Nice.
But I started posting the worst, stupidest memes imaginable. And it was literally like awful. I deleted all of them. You can't even go and look at them now. And what I did, I just kept following the followers of Decision Denied, I Hate Freight, USA Transportation. This was all in the midst. This was October of 2020. In November of 2020, I moved to Poland. So most people know I have Polish roots. Christian has Polish roots too. We were born and raised in the Chicagoland area. Yeah. We were born and raised here. I moved to Ukraine in November 2017.
Did you speak English or Polish before you spoke English? You probably did as well, just like me. I mean, I didn't speak English until six.
I don't even know. I think... I'm not sure.
My parents just threw me straight into private kindergarten, and I don't think I spoke like any English when I walked in.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, we both speak fluently Polish, and so like when I quit Everest during the pandemic, I wanted to move to Poland. I mean, it was something I've always wanted to do. My grandparents lived there. Like I've always wanted to live there. I just started working from Poland, doing Bang Bang Freight. And we actually hit like $60,000 in revenue the first month, which was like actually like pretty good. But I didn't like it. I actually like kind of hated it. I was like, I just quit a job that I was getting paid well at. I had everything set up, you know, like didn't really have to work that hard if I didn't want to, into like a job where like I, you know, were essentially, you know, looking for new customers. And I was like, I hate this. This sucks. So, but I ended up making just a lot of memes and spending a lot of time on there on Instagram. And I realized how powerful it was. And, you know, within a few months, you know, we regularly had 1,000 views on our Instagram stories, and people were messaging me all the time. Like they were sending me emails to like send them like our load list and stuff like that. So I just kept working on that. And we ended up closing Bang Bang Freight in March of 2021. I actually opened a second brokerage with other business partners that also didn't work out. And I also owned a burger joint, fast food restaurant in Poland at the same time.
You had the biggest, I think it's like one of the biggest burgers you guys had. It was like a big stack, right?
No, we created, there was an influencer that came to visit us once and we created like a really, really big burger for him.
How big was that? Like 12 inches?
It was huge. Yeah. It was really big. But I was all over the place. And I thought I could open 4 businesses and have them all be successful. Obviously that's BS. And I learned the hard way. You need to stay focused. The more focused you are on one business, the more successful the business will be. But, so this is just, I'm going to start wrapping up here a little bit, but with this story, but let's see here. So the follower count kept growing on Instagram. I kept seeing like, you know, the benefits of having an audience online. And then I ended up changing the name to Freight Caviar in May of 2021. This was after having listened to the Rap Caviar playlist on Spotify. I thought Freight Caviar sounds amazing. And I called my good friend Tom, who you know Tom, yeah. Stavinsky, from who used to be the youngest intern or youngest employee at Coyote, then owned a trucking company in Chicago, ended up moving to Poland as well. And we connected in Poland. he loved the username as well. He's like, Paul, like, you know, you focus a lot on like Eastern Europe and like the Eastern European influence and trucking in the US. It's like, and they obviously love caviar.
Match made in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. And like freight and caviar have the same amount of letters, I think. I'm going to take that back. It's one off. But write it, it looks almost the same. but okay. So that day in May of 2021, I changed our username to Freight Caviar. We were only on Instagram and Twitter back then. Bought the Freight Caviar domain. And things kept taking off. I wasn't making any money off of it yet. I was monetizing.
You had a lot of backlash from what I remember you telling me about changing the name to Freight Caviar. Yeah, people were like commenting. And
that's a good point. So the first day I changed our name from Shipping Palace to Freight Caviar, everyone was messaging me. It's like, why'd you change your name? Like username, like Shipping Palace was so much better than Freight Caviar. I remember like Bob from USA Transportation. He's like, yo, like I think I'm going to change my username to Shipping Palace. Like that's so much better than Freight Caviar too. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. Like, first of all, like it was a gut feeling that was super like powerful for me. It was like Freight Caviar sounds perfect. Like, and that's also something I learned like earlier, is like trusting your gut feeling.
Just go with your gut.
Yeah. Like your gut knows. But so what was funny, I did a poll on Instagram and I was like, which username do you prefer, Shipping Palace or Freight Caviar? We had 1,000 votes. 800 people chose Shipping Palace. And I still like disregarded that. I was like, you know, people also, I've learned that like whenever anyone makes a change that people are accustomed to,
people are apprehensive.
Always apprehensive.
Always. The same thing with X, with when Twitter was changing. Yeah. And then now it's just like a normal.
Exactly.
Like, that's the default.
Exactly. You know? And it's like you just have to ignore that. You know, like
when you have a good feeling in your gut.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You have to ignore that. I feel like people used to always like get upset with like the Apple updates, you know, like back in the day.
Yeah, that was like, sometimes tough for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because people, like a lot of people are not like tech, you know, especially tech minded or tech oriented. And when it comes to Apple and doing any update, that's like a big change.
No.
They just feel confused, you know, don't like
for
the feeling.
Sure.
So.
Exactly. I mean, there's that chart, right? Where like you have like the first group of people that are.
Yeah, it's the Crossing the Chasm. There's this book called The Crossing the Chasm. And there's like this bell curve and it's divided into four sections. It's the I think it's the innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, or something like that. Great book, but
so to that point, it was the same with Freight Caviar, but so I just kept making memes, kept working. So in August of 2021, Ryan Rogers was starting TextLocate and he DM'd me on Instagram to see if I could promote TextLocate. And I remember like hopping on a call with him and I really had a good feeling with him. I was like, okay, like he knows the industry very well. He's a good guy, like, and et cetera. So great, I was like, And I literally was like, Ryan, instead of charging you, could you just like be my mentor, and like help me out? And like Ryan always believed, he always like was like pushing me. He's like, well, after, you know, once we started like talking, he's like telling me like all the things I could do to like monetize Freight Caviar, like, you know, you, like, and so it gave me this belief where I'm like, okay, this could actually be a business in itself. This is cool. Like, this is something that I, you know, like if you're running a company, if you're a founder, et cetera, like being passionate about something is literally the most important factor in what you're doing. Like if you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
Like,
the best thing is if you have a hobby and then you figure out how to monetize on it.
Exactly.
Right? That's the best.
Yeah. Like being truly passionate about what you want to do is very important. And so like, I knew brokerage wasn't it. And I can't imagine a lot of people being passionate about it. I mean, some people are, and people that are passionate about things will outwork anyone and they'll make it successful. So,
cause it doesn't feel like work to you.
Exactly.
Like for the most part, it's just fun. You like it and it's how you like to spend your time.
Yeah, exactly. So that was in August of 2021. And that was also the same time I came out with the podcast, same time I started doing the newsletter, even though it wasn't like really like official, it wasn't scheduled and structured.
That started off what, once a week?
It was all over the place. It was whenever I wanted to.
Had time. Okay.
Yeah,
when did like the structure actually finally like come in? Like Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
The structure came in when Adriana came on board last year in October.
Okay.
That was when it was like structured and finalized.
Cool.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. But yeah, before that, it was like I try to do it often. I remember like the first week, I think I did it every day. And it was just like summaries.
Too much, probably.
When I came out with the podcast, I literally had an episode come out every single day, Monday through Friday. And every day it came out a newsletter about like the person I interviewed.
And, interesting. And you were doing that many interviews. Oh, yeah, I remember you were doing a lot.
But this was a year before we met.
Oh, but even okay.
This was August September 2021.
So you brought Adriana. So Adriana came on as
a year after that.
A year after that.
Yeah. So okay. It was like it was a while. Like I mean, it was a lot of like you know like I wasn't making any money off of Freight Cagger then, so I wasn't able to you know invest in any of it.
The story about Adriana is also interesting too, which is pretty cool.
We'll get there. Yeah. Get there in a second. So that was kind of like towards the end of 2021. And then I started posting on LinkedIn, the Freight Caviar page. That's when we got onto it. And it was really like the growth on LinkedIn was very slow until like a couple memes went absolutely viral and like skyrocket our following and interest in that. So
I think one of my all time favorite memes is the one with this and Ryan Peterson, I think, reposted this, mm-hmm. which definitely helped make it go viral. It was the sword as you're starting to pull it out. It said something about the rate.
Let me. Okay. I know this.
Yeah, I'm gonna butcher it.
The caption is when you ask the carrier for a tracking update, and it's like the sword meme, and the top sword. No, it's like the caption was when you ask the carrier if the load delivered, and the sword is coming out, and it says yes, and then the bottom picture with the sword fully out, it says yesterday the truck broke down. So. Yeah, that one actually, that one went viral on LinkedIn. Ryan Peterson from Flexport, he shared it on Twitter as well. That was beginning of 2022. But overall, we just started, like, I guess taking it more seriously. And towards the beginning of 2022 was when I went full time on Freight Caviar. Like, I'm going to figure this out. And like our first official, like legit sponsor was Ascend TMS. This was
shout out Ascend.
It was interesting because I did a podcast. I interviewed Tim Hyam, the CEO of Ascend, and after the podcast he's like, Paul, like I want to sponsor you, like what are your costs and stuff. I'm like, oh crap, okay, I gotta figure out all my costs now. Like, you know, I sent him all this information. It was all over the place, and he's like, you know, like Tim was like, okay Paul, I just want you to share, you know, every week on all your channels, something about Ascend, like, and we'll pay you this much. And, you know, we agreed, and he's been a long time sponsor. And, that's been great. That was beginning of, that was January of 2022. And that's when I like got kind of like the product market fit, I guess. I'm like, okay,
there's something here.
And from there, like on, like we just kept building and growing, 2022, we, you know, just kept building up on that. And then, in August of 2022, I tweeted out on Twitter, kind of making fun of like VC backed firms that raised a ton of money, because there was Fox News ran a story where they were like in a warehouse in California with all these pallets in the background. And like the caption was like how trucking companies are sharing capacity, you know, for efficiencies and stuff.
And they're portraying it as like a novelty. Yeah, like, it's backed by tons of VC dollars.
Yeah, backed by VC dollars. Essentially, the fact that companies are partialing freight. And I was like, you know, like Eastern Europeans have been doing this in Chicago for like 30 years. You know, like Fox News should go visit them. Or, and I like that tweet did very well at that time being, because I barely had any like, you know, followers or likes. And I saw Christian liked it. And I go, okay, Christian, you know, his name is very Polish. I click on his profile and I saw that he was the CEO and founder of Autobahn.ai. I went on his website. I'm like, okay, this is really cool. Like, I'm going to DM Christian just to see if he wants to come on our podcast. Like, he'd be a good guest. And so he messages me back, and then like we connect, and he basically just told me, like, remember you told me that you were just, tell me, what was that first meeting? Like, you told me that you were done with Autobahn.
So I was, for the context, so Autobahn was a self-driving truck company. We were mainly focused on helping drivers like be safer and easier, just kind of reduce the barrier to entry to become a truck driver with like advanced computers. And then that, after 6 years, wound that down, essentially ran out of enough money to keep the company going. And there was this period from, I would say, February of 2022 to essentially August of 2022, where I was just trying to figure out like what am I doing next. And I mean, I have the startup bug. So I was just trying to find what's the next thing. And there was a lot of problems that I identified, or kind of just inconveniences, let's put it. When I was running basically a fleet of two trucks, because so I had an MC at a US dot number, you know, I had to go through insurance. I actually even got my own CDL. So I was doing a lot of driving, moving freight around the country, not like full time, but I'd do it just to, was mainly to test our software on the truck, but move that freight around. So I was doing like loads for Pepsi, GE. And I was experiencing a lot of, delays. So I'd get there, I'd have an appointment time and I'd be waiting for like 6 hours. And so that was something that always ended up staying with me. Like on my mind, I was like, as to why, if I have an appointment time, how is this all still being like delayed? So anyway, from February of 2022 to August of 2022, I was working on, this, basically, you know, startup concept, which we were calling ZipDocs. I had, two, kind of co-founders, although we never incorporated the company at the time. And it was basically a dynamic appointment scheduling system. So it's kind of like essentially OpenDoc, which a lot of people would know. But what it would do is that it would use it. I would say it was pretty ahead of its time in the sense that, it would use like AI to call the driver and speak to them, ask them questions about like, are they delayed? Are they going to be on time? And the driver could just speak back to them. And so this is before OpenAI, like even was really a thing. I don't think actually OpenAI came out until or ChatGPT came out until November of 2022. I mean, we were in Poland when it came out. I remember this was like the craziest thing ever. But anyway, so it was really cool because if the driver spoke and said, hey, I'm going to be delayed by 30 minutes, it would actually try to dynamically recalculate where the next best slot is based on like how many docs there were in the warehouse too. And so it was a very intellectually stimulating problem because it was like a lot of optimization. And anyway, so that was what I worked on. But what we kind of, and I guess where does this kind of segment now? Because
okay, well, I actually wanted to touch on this a little bit because Christian showed me what he was working on. And I'm like, this is amazing.
On the first meeting, yeah.
Yeah, like this is so cool. Like and I remember you were struggling a little bit on like the marketing sales side of things. And yeah. We were like, okay, like there's some synergies here. Like we gotta work together somehow.
And yeah, like, we just knew like right away it was kind of like, okay, we have the opposites of what the others kind of doesn't have.
You know? Exactly. So. Exactly. And it was cool that we both had, you know, like obviously similar roots. We were both like raised from like Polish families in Chicago. So like there's obviously that. Like we were connected in a way, and like we kind of felt like we've known each other for a long time, even though we just met.
Yeah, it's been literally like just over a year.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Crazy to think about.
Exactly. So, but what was interesting? So, like, we were like, okay, like let's start working on this and like figuring things out. And I was like, Christian, we should talk to Tim from Ascend.
Yeah, because like, you knew him like as a mentor.
Yeah, like
let's see what he has to say.
Tim was always like, if I had anything to ask him, he was always very helpful. He was very insightful. He knows the industry in and out. Like he's been on the tech side. He's been also, he's owned and sold a freight brokerage. So he knows it all around. He's very smart. And so I was like, okay, let's set up a call with Tim. And let's see his thoughts are on this. Because like before we actually dive in and, you know, maybe spend like a lot of time and money on this, let's see if this is actually good like use of our time. And so I remember like we set up a call with him and like Tim gave us like good insights. He was like essentially
ripped into it.
Well, you know, he ripped
in a good way. Like
he ripped it in the sense that like he's like, okay, look at OpenDoc. Look at I forgot the other. There was another one.
Forkites has also their own
free doc scheduler. Yeah. He's like these are your competitors. Like you know like OpenDoc was bought out by Loadsmart and like it was more like it was an acquisition they made because it wasn't necessarily made for like. The fact that they were extremely profitable was more because
insights into like how the carriers were on time and then what the lengths kind of were.
Insights into like the shippers more data more, I think more importantly.
I recently learned it was also like on the carrier side.
Okay. Yeah. But like, and he was saying like, you know, like it's an uphill battle with OpenDocs. Yeah. Like,
and it definitely was throughout that February to August period. Like it was hard to get
shipper. Just the technical side of things, but now like
the selling side, because were trying to sell this, but it was more so targeted to kind of like enterprise level shippers. And what I learned was when you sell software to big companies, there's not only long sales cycles, which can be viewed in one of two ways. It can be really hard to build a business like that, but then it's also very advantageous if you actually land that deal because the sales cycles are so long, so they kind of act as a moat.
Yeah.
And the other part was like something that I learned was they have big companies, big customers essentially have like insurance requirements. So like if sometimes they're implementing or integrating certain software and it's going to be kind of integrated into their existing day-to-day processes, is if something goes wrong, they actually kind of want like an insurance policy kind of around this. And so we didn't see that too often. But there was one or two times that we got asked that, and I was like, wow, I was not at all prepared for this. But and I kind of like, once I thought about it, I was like, okay, this makes sense. Like if they're relying on our software and something really does go wrong, even though it's software, it's not like somebody can get hurt necessarily speaking, right? But like a discontinuation to whatever their business and might cost them some revenue or something else.
Sure.
So anyway, we talked to Tim. Yeah. And honestly, I think it was a good thing that he ripped into it. Yeah. And I felt a little bit, you know, I like to put myself in those types of situations where I get the raw feedback from somebody, because I really don't honestly appreciate going to somebody and them kind of sugarcoating it to me. Yeah, like if they honestly think something else, then just say it. Like it's not like you're going to offend me. Yeah. I might be like, oh my God, I spent like 8 months on this thing, but
sure.
It's just the name of the game.
Yeah. You know? So. I mean, I know that Michael Jordan had like told coaches that he doesn't want them to tell him like what he's good at. He wants them to tell him what he's bad at.
Yeah. Where you need to improve.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like he doesn't care what he's good at. Like,
right.
Like,
and for the longest time, that's been, it can be sometimes problematic because it's like sometimes you don't bring that optimistic energy into the room. And no. I am definitely like a perfectionist, and that can be problematic too. But, that's the way that I know how to improve and get better is the good stuff is working. So don't touch it. Just focus all your time and energy on the things that are not working, because that's the only thing that you can kind of fix, you know?
Yeah. And so I remember on that call, I was like, Tim, okay, like if you were in our shoes, what would you be working on? What kind of problem can we fix, technically speaking? And he was like, well, all my customers need a CRM, like a Descent TMS. And we're like, okay. And like, I remember like the look on you and like Harris's face was like, we're not building a CRM.
It was so, oh my God. I was so not entertained by the idea of the CRM at the very, very beginning. Because I was like, oh my God. I just came from a company that was, you know, like hardware, like deep tech, like really, really difficult problems from all disciplines. And then going from that to building a CRM was not exactly something that was entertaining in the outset. Yeah. Right. So like right away, it wasn't. But then we kind of got off the call. And at least we started entertaining it, because we're looking like, how are we going to make something that somebody wants?
Exactly. Right? I remember like on the call real quick, like Tim was like, I don't know, like I would call like Shipper CRM. And like, I remember like, I think Harris just like bought the domain right away. And like,
yeah.
And that's like literally just the name, like right there, like Shipper CRM came about. Yeah. But yeah. And then I think you're going to get to the point where like, I think you wanted me to post on Instagram stories. To see.
Yeah. So I was, I wasn't yet in Poland. I think you came to the States. You were in the States during this time or something like that.
The call with Tim was like a week before I went to the States. And then I flew to the States, and that's when like we were all together.
And then Harris, which is no longer with us, but he started with us early on. We all got together, went to a JOC, I think, conference.
Yeah.
We got spent some time together mulling over this idea. And and I said, Paul, like, okay, I will do this. If we can post on our, you know, social media platforms essentially, a poll, like would you sign up for this product that we didn't really know what it was yet, but I think actually by the time we made the post, we kind of came around to the idea that really it wasn't a CRM per se.
It wasn't yet then.
It wasn't that point.
No, I don't remember.
What was this poll about?
Okay, the poll was really like, would you, if we created a CRM for freight brokers specifically, like, and it had like, you know, all the nuances that freight brokers maybe deal with, or the questions they want to ask a shipper, and putting that in a database, like strictly just creating a CRM for freight brokers, would you be interested in it? So that was like the gist of it, the post. Okay. And this was September, end of September. And like, I think we got like 20 emails within like an hour or so. I'm not sure if the time
we
was
got
correct.
200 people that signed
we got 200 emails from two Instagram stories. But I think the first hour was like 20 emails in Harris. And you're like, wow, okay.
Well,
like,
this is
within like, 1 hour, like 20 emails already. Like, that was a lot.
That was a lot.
Like, yeah. People that want to use it. And then
more than we were used to, that's for sure.
yeah. Okay. And this is just the power of social media and having an audience. Like, you could actually do this, especially if you're like, you know, you have a niche audience of people.
Exactly.
Like, so that was like, you know, a sign where you and Harris were like, okay, maybe there's something here that we could work on. And then the transition to like a shipper database happened
over time.
In Poland.
Yeah, it was
in
Poland.
I remember when you sat down a thing with me.
So once I think that poll went out, right? And we got all those people. There's 200 people that responded to the poll, I think, on Instagram.
Yeah.
And for day one, it was like 100. Day two, I think we posted again or something like this. And it was another 100 people. I was like, wow, okay, 2 days in a row and we get this many people. I was like, okay, let me start thinking about this more. Like, but I didn't take it necessarily for face value. I took, when Tim said, you know, all of our customers, and there's 50,000 Ascend customers, it's the most popular platform for TMS that there is at the moment. When he said this, I decided to dig deeper. Like, what exactly, why do they need to use a CRM? Why do they want a CRM? And ultimately asking those follow-up questions to myself amongst ourselves, right? The answer to me at least became very clear that it wasn't really the software that allowed you to manage the relationships. It was unequivocally the I need more relationships to begin with, right? That was how do I find the people to kind of reach out to and build relationships with? They really were just all looking for more customers at the end of the day, right? Majority of the, you know, I don't know if majority, but a lot of the fleets use, you know, load boards for a lot of their business, which, you know, long-term isn't exactly sustainable. So everybody, if you can get a direct shipper, it's like the best, you know, best source of business for a logistics company. So once we started digging in, we're like, okay, well, what they really need is leads. They need leads and they need quality leads, and they want to know what do these companies actually do? So kind of like research. And when we started talking to some of the people that signed up for our waitlist, we started learning that they spend, like, people on their team, if they have a sales team, first off, if they have one, which most people necessarily didn't, because it's like a one or two person, you know, three person company. If they had a sales team, the sales team was spending like 50% of their time on a yearly basis, actually just researching the prospects. They were cleaning up their lists of all the contacts that they had. They were, the data gets stale over time. People switch jobs. You don't know who went where, if they're still at the company, if the phone number is valid, the email's valid. And so this was just like cold outreach is a standard name of the game for sales and freight. And so when we started asking those questions of like, well, is there anything out there right now? Like, you know, there was Zoom Info. People were getting their leads from Zoom Info. They're getting it from like Apollo. There are contact databases out there, right? But then we asked, you know, okay, well, why do some people might like, why don't certain people want to use like Zoom Info? The number one reason was like, it's super expensive right up front because they make you sign it like a 3-year contract and paid.
And the contract is like,
there's some gruesome clauses you can get in there.
Like, Zoom Info does sue a lot of customers or like old, like, I guess, ex customers that left and ended up using those email lists. Cause you're technically not allowed to, this is what I've heard. So just double check this online. But I've heard that like in the Zoom Info contract, if you use that email list or contact list that they sold to you, you are only allowed to use that information while being a customer of Zoom Info.
Correct.
Once you're not a customer, that's their information. And they actually have like these filler emails that they place into like the data that they sell you. And like, let's say you end up like sending like 1,000 emails to like, you know, specific customers, a couple of their specific emails will be there and there, and they'll be able to detect that you use your list.
Trigger. Yeah. They set off an alarm essentially.
And then they'll like come after you and sue you. So like, yeah. I mean,
granted, you know, like besides that, right? Like ZoomInfo has unlocked a lot of opportunity, I think, for lots of people that I guess can't afford it. It's really, you know, these contact databases have only come up in the recent years, mainly just because of the proliferation of the data that's available on the internet. And so, that was a big, you know, big reason for it. But nonetheless, when we started putting the pieces together after asking lots of questions, we realized, okay, so they do need a tool to manage all this data, but more importantly, they need like the fire hose to be they need an open fire hose to begin with. Because otherwise they're basically either scouring like Google Maps, was one you said you were doing that early on when you were running at Everest. You're just literally scouring Google Maps of all the shipper locations, and they weren't shipper because they're not exactly shipper locations on Google Maps. They're, you know, McDonald's. There's a bunch of different types of buildings and entities there. So you have to kind of filter which ones are shippers and which ones aren't. So anyway, there's tons of time being spent doing this research, and we said, okay, let's build not only the tool to manage that information, but then let's also actually provide this fire hose of, you know, context as well, but only for freight, right? So like you won't get any context that, or you won't be able to choose from any context that are like, have a, for example, title of an HR manager, because that's not relevant for you to get a deal, you know, to get a contract on a lane with a shipper. And so we started looking into how to do that. And I had some contacts, basically relationships that I built from the Audubon days that I was able to leverage basically on like the phone and email validation side. So that was a big unlock because I kind of connected those dots, pieced those things together. And there's really no way around doing manual. There's no way around manually validating this information, because like robocalling is not necessarily allowed per se, to some certain extent. And so you really needed somebody who has actually picking up the phone and like calling and seeing if this information, you know, at least if the phone number is not disconnected anymore. So, so through that relationship that I had in the prior company, rekindled it and, basically ran this very, very crude version of the app, which long story short, I won't get too much into the detail, but what the way that it worked was that you could essentially request a contact at any company, and this was really, really dumb in retrospect, but you can put in basically any company's name and any title that you wanted. So at that time, we didn't even like suggest contact, you know, a list of contact suggestions of any kind. And we put a placeholder in like the input field and it said VP of distribution as a placeholder, just so that people know what to type there. And literally every single request, I think we got like, I don't know, 20, 30 requests, every single one of those VP of distribution.
So yeah, this was the first version of Shipper CRM that came out like basically a month after
we said, oh, let's do this.
Yeah. And it was funny because, I mean, we had four paying customers within a week of like just trying to do like sales and stuff. And I remember like how excited we were, like all giving high fives, like in the office.
We made money on the internet.
Yeah. Like literally it was definitely a cool experience, but we knew that it was not enough. It was like testing the waters to see if like there is a need and desire for this in the market and in the industry. So, I mean, there's definitely been a lot of growth since then. Cause that was towards the end of 2022, and then entering 2023, I mean, we've done a lot.
We've took that first app, I don't know, version. Call it like a 0.1 version, because it was not even like, you know, fully, not even close to fully fleshed out. that was like 0.1. And then I think from that, we were able to learn what, okay, none of these people, especially a lot of like small trucking companies, like they don't really know what the titles of these, you know, potential titles of these people as shippers are. So then, you know, we had to come up with a way to solve that problem, which is, okay, they want these contacts, like they want to be able to contact these people, but they just don't know who they're looking for. So we have to give them some suggestions. And so we came up with a way to do that. And that was, that worked quite well. People really loved that. They can just browse, you know, they don't, if the company has like, say 100 contacts, you know, only probably 3 of them are going to be relevant to a freight broker or to a, you know, carrier rep, or sorry, to a sales rep at a carrier, because not the entire company doesn't do logistics, right? Yeah. It's only like 3 people. So,
but I do want to add to this. So when we came out with the first or 0.1 version, I remember it was like Tim saw that. I think we might have even updated him, like saying, hey, like we got like 4 paying customers.
We were just heads down for literally a month. Yeah, I don't think we spoke to like anybody.
Well, we ended up getting the 4 paying customers, and like we told Tim, like within a month of him giving us the idea for a CRM, like, yo, we have paying customers, like we're like at $1,000 like in like recurring revenue monthly. And he's like, I'm investing. Like, I want to invest.
Yeah.
I
remember, it was like immediate.
I love the reaction from Tim. He's like, all right, like I'm like, he wanted to come on board. And so we brought Tim on board.
Yeah.
And Tim's been great, like great insights. Definitely knows the industry very well.
The one thing that I really liked always about Tim was that, he'd always push back he's a veteran in the industry, right? So he knows a lot of things where, newcomers, like especially like me, optimist technologists and stuff like this, like I'm sometimes, you know, I can be up in the sky, and then I've generally always loved to surround myself with the people who are absolutely on the other side, so that in general you won't usually always agree with them, or neither side will always fully agree with each other, but there will be like this answer that you end up finding right in the middle, which is like this kind of sweet spot of, okay, something new can be applied to an old concept, and maybe something wasn't thought about, you know, in a new way, as it was previously. So exactly. That I really love that from the beginning, that was always my favorite thing about Tim, is that he would push back, but then he'd like let us run the ship. Yeah. And that was, that's just like an invaluable thing to have as not only investor, but just, you know, as a mentor. So anybody's out there starting, thinking about starting a freight tech company, go and, you know, speak to Tim, because he's full of gold. For sure. Yeah,
definitely. Always willing to help out if you connect with them on LinkedIn. But so, I mean, 23.
Just to say, like he can come across on like LinkedIn. He can come across as very, we've heard, you know, heard comments like eccentric, and like it is part of his personality. But honestly, in like his social presence versus his presence, like when we're on a, you know, call with him or in person, totally two different things, right? And so, you know, he's learned certain marketing tactics that have worked for him. I mean, Ascend is a very, very successful company. They have 50,000 customers now. And, you know, you got to know something to be able to get to that point.
They're definitely top of mind when it comes to TMSs. And it's funny because I forgot who it was. I was talking to someone recently and they mentioned Ascend TMS, and he's like, I see them everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like being top of mind is definitely very important. Having an audience is very important. And, but yeah, so, I mean, to get back into like, I guess our timeline here.
Yeah.
So we relaunched, I guess we launched Shipper CRM at TIA in April. It was a half baked product essentially.
Yeah. So I was in Poland. Yeah. I remember October 24th or something like this. I came to your house in Lublin, Poland, and, actually ended up staying there, supposed to stay there for a month. Then I extended it for another month, and then I extended it for like another 2 weeks. So I was there for a whole 2.5 months, basically all the way through the holidays too. Yeah. And at the time, Harris, that was the funniest thing ever, which was like, we were on a call with Harris, who we were starting this with initially. And he was in Utah, a really good friend of mine. And he was at Utah at the time, and I was in Poland. We posted that the poll to Instagram, where the people, like 100 people, signed up right away. And I remember we got on the call with him and convinced him right then and there to get on the next flight to Poland.
No, we convinced him, I think, after we got a paying customer.
Oh, yes.
The polls were earlier.
That's true.
It was like a month and a half earlier.
We got a paying customer.
Yeah, when we got a paying customer, that's when we were like, okay, like buy the ticket, we'll expense it. Like, we got a customer, like, you know.
And he, I think that was like 8 or 9 p.m. his time at the time or something like that.
Our time. It was late. It was night for us, and then like it was probably like afternoon for him.
Yeah, and then it was like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. was his flight to Chicago.
So he left really quickly, and he came.
That was a fun spontaneous type of memory from it. But yeah, so we got through that. We literally gutted the first version. We like almost probably 95% of everything that was written was completely redone because we had to. We took all the learnings, you know, from the first version. And the one thing that we realized too was that in order for this to actually work and scale, a shipper CRM that is, was that we needed to have a kind of like a master record of a single company and not have duplicates of companies and context, because then if we showed duplicates, users would be like very confused as to like, okay, which Pepsi do you know, choose in like a drop-down menu. So that was a really challenging problem, and still, you know, to some extent, maybe is.
I mean, for someone that's not technical, it might not seem like a big problem. You know, for us, it's like, oh, like for me, like who doesn't know anything about, you know, coding and stuff like that, right. It seems like, you know, just kind of fix it kind of thing.
Let's say Pepsi Inc.
Organizing
Pepsi,
the data,
Inc, right?
Yeah, organizing the data is very like tedious work, and it's time consuming and getting that correct, because you got to get it correct in the beginning. You can't fix it along the way.
Yeah, and the hard part about it is that getting it done right took a little bit extra time in the beginning, which was kind of counterproductive to our momentum. Yeah. Which our momentum was really good, and then we kind of, you know, because we had to build certain things out, we, you know, arguably could have said turned. The momentum came down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
But then what it was like, we launched the next version at TIA.
And just real quick to talk about the momentum. Yeah. I know I saw Sam Altman talking about that on Twitter. Like there's a video of him saying how momentum is everything in a business. And so, we're kind of like we don't have that same momentum yet, but what TIA was great. Cause we met with Triumph at Harry Potter World.
Correct.
Yeah, Tim connected us.
Yes.
So Triumph is an investor in Ascent TMS. This was he did a Series A round, where the only investor was Triumph.
Correct.
Back like in I think 2015-2016-ish. And so Tim connected us with Triumph, and that was what was amazing about what Triumph did was they rented out the whole Harry Potter world
at Universal Studios.
So like typically this place has like thousands of people. Like to get on a one ride to wait 2 hours.
Yeah.
We went onto a ride. They had one ride open for us, and there was only 200 people at the Harry Potter World at TIA in Orlando. Unbelievable. And we get on this ride, and we literally like the ride finishes and people are like, yo, can you run it again? And they're like, okay, if you want to go again, just stay in your seats and we'll run it again.
So we went twice.
Yeah. Literally like, in a ride that, you know, you have to wait 2 hours to get into. Like, that was amazing. But yeah, we got connected with the CEO and CFO of Triumph, and, you know,
got really, you know, got, well, I wouldn't say at that exact point in time, got close with them too, but
it was,
you know,
a quick conversation.
It was like a 5-minute meeting.
But Tim vouched for us, and they ended up investing in us, which was definitely sweet.
great endorsement.
Yeah, it definitely a lot like allows us to now actually invest in the company, like and, you know, gives us like, I don't know,
it gives us the ability and the resources to do this, you know, right. First and foremost, it does right, and it gives us, you know, the time to weather out any storm or if one were to come, essentially. So that's, you know, it's not like we're going to be hiring like crazy or anything like that. It's just still, this is it's kind of like between a pre-seed and seed stage company. Still, you know, we have revenue. We have, you know, good amount of customers at this time, and having you know, an endorsement and network, distribution network, really was the big thing, right? Is yeah. that Triumph's network of customers can also benefit from Shipper CRM, because they essentially are all, for the most part, logistics companies. Yeah. So that was pretty big for us, like strategically, you know, aligning ourselves with Tim, so owner of SendTMS. He has 50,000 customers that, you know, now essentially when you log into SendTMS, all 50,000 customers, when they go to SendTMS, there's a button, big button that says go to Shipper CRM. And so that gave us like a ton of you know, exposure to a very large audience of people. And then, you know, with you know, Triumph, we'll hopefully have that something along the same lines as well. Yeah. So,
but what happened also with our launch at TIA was we figured out, or we realized it was a half-baked product, right? Yeah. And so we kind of were rushed into releasing it. We're like, okay, this is a deadline, we have to release it. But, you know, we realized like, okay, like maybe we should hold off a little bit here on the marketing sales side of things. Let's go back. Let's fix it up. Let's make it right. And like, let's bake it fully and then release it.
Yeah. It was more so fundamentally, it was the back end of the things that you don't see when you're a user. That was actually pretty well established by April. But what was half baked about it was I was designing. I'm not a user interface designer, right? And so I did my best basically to put kind of things together. But when you have, what I learned is if you have an engineer design an interface, they design it as if, and I'm speaking for myself too, they design it more so never almost from the perspective of how the user is going to use it, let alone a user who, let's say, the real example, does not know how to scroll on the computer, right? Like that you have a mouse pad that you can scroll with two fingers or use your mouse wheel. Like that was the first for me, but there are people like that still out there. And so that was mainly the big, I think, issue of adoption. Although we did get a lot of good feedback. People said it was like really well designed. Obviously, I'm very critical of my own, you know, our own work. And I was like, no, this is not great, but yeah. But anyway, so we got a big boost from that TIA launch as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what really did change though was the idea behind the map, the magic map, because that does change things a lot. And I mean, if you look at the first version, even second version, and now this version, it's quite remarkable.
This version is way better and simpler, way simpler. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome, because like right now only like a few people have seen it. I mean, by the time we release this podcast, you know, it's gonna be like released, but
right,
but like, yeah, this is
essentially amazing. When you look at the magic map now, what you can kind of envision this maybe being long term, right, is that right now there's a few thousand warehouses, a few thousand essentially shippers on this map. And so it's a 3D, first off, it's in 3D. So we're basically completely refuting the idea that the world is flat, if there was any discrepancy about that. But besides the point, it's really nice, very simple. And all these shippers that are on this map, they're going to continue growing, like the amount of shippers that appear on this map, until essentially we have every single shipper in the entire United States. That's the goal, right? And now, what does that look like? What you know, I think a lot about is what does a world look like in which we know what every single shipper at least is like currently in business right now. We might not necessarily know everything, you know, everything about their supply chain per se, but at least what is there available on the internet that could be found and kind of compressed into a single database for people to view. Because ultimately, really, what we're doing with Shipper CRM is saving salespeople tons of time by, you know, not having to do their own research, compiling all that research, then cleaning that research and keeping it up to date. Right. So we do that for you. And if there's one source of truth for basically the shippers in the supply chain, there's a lot of potential and possibility outside of like just helping people get sales too. Like we're sitting on this massive database of, you know, every single location that a truck goes to in the entire United States. So that's quite exciting. We have some ideas for how that might look like down the road, but like right now, you know, as you mentioned in the beginning, just staying focused, like on just this, you know, this effort to help people find, win, and manage more shippers is the goal. So we just got to get this off the ground first, and then it will be even fun, you know, even more fun then.
Exactly. So yeah, that's like basically the story. I do want to get some questions from Instagram. I think we have a couple questions from Instagram because I put something out there.
Cool.
From followers to see what they have to ask us or what they're interested in real quick. Let me pull it up real quick. So when did you realize, this is from Kevin, when did you realize starting a business around the freight world would be successful? I guess we kind of answered that along the way, where it's like, it came from just like seeing that there's...
I think it was once you got your first, like Text Locate actually
I think
gave you money, right?
What's important is the fact that if you have an audience, like it's valuable no matter what, right?
Yeah.
Like it's the ability, inherent value. You can monetize an audience in various ways. Yeah, there's definitely so many ways to monetize an audience that like, that's definitely like the key is like, if you have an audience... Like you could, there's various books, I don't know, even Twitter profiles you could follow to learn more. Absolutely. Someone asked, I want to know your history as a broker. So I was a broker from, graduated U of I in 2015. My fraternity brother, his dad owned a brokerage in Lincolnwood, Illinois, Truck Freight Services. They actually got acquired by Becker Logistics early last year. Worked there for a year. I left. I actually thought after that year that I will never go back into freight. I was like, I mean,
that was a lie.
Well, I barely made like any money at Trek, even though I had a lot of loads. Like commission structure was really bad. And like, I'm like, well, I'm dealing with all this, you know, like BS and stuff. Like I should be making more. But I was like, okay, like I ended up traveling for 6 months, spend every dollar I had. And then I came home and I was absolutely broke. I had like $30 in my bank account. And I'm like, okay, I need to get a job. So I actually reached out to my friend who worked at CS Recruiting. And she got me four job interviews in 1 week. I had four job offers. And then like two companies, one was Everest, the other was, I think, K&L Freight Management. They both like upped their base salary. I ended up going with Everest because they just kind of like, K&L is a lot more corporate, way built up. Everest is just seven guys like in a hole in Evanston, like having fun. So that's what I did. And then saw like the growth. Cause when I started at Everest in 2017, there was seven of us in a room in Evanston and like two people in Ukraine that were working from home. And then like by the time I had left in October of 2020, we had like over like 120 people. Cause there's like 20 people in Evanston, and like 100 people in Kiev. So I just thought the growth was...
And you hired almost all of them in Kiev, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A majority of
them. So how was that interview process like?
Oh, man.
How old were you?
Well, I was 24 when I started. So 24 to 27. I mean, I had a lot of interviews. It was actually, I have a funny story about an interview in Kiev, Ukraine. So this guy shows up and he looks like he's Latino, like in Ukraine, like all tatted, like big guy, like it looks like a football player kind of thing. And, you know, he comes to an interview, like American accent, like clean, perfect American accent. Like, I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting. And he tells me like, yeah, he was born in Ukraine. And when he was 3 years old, he moved to the States. And he like, dude, supposedly like we went, like he lived like right next to my elementary school for a while. And then like he moved to Miami.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, this guy's like in like perfect English. I'm like this, you know, like he's about to like accept a job offer with like an $800 base salary plus commission. I'm like, this is just weird. Like this guy, like, and like, I'm like, I told the HR like chick, I was like, run a background check on this guy. Like this guy, like there's no way, like this guy should not be like here right now. I should not be interviewing him. And like like we do a background check.
It just was not, it was out of, it was not normal for that.
So we ran a background check on him and like, he was like arrested like 10 times for theft or like stealing vehicles.
Okay.
In Miami. And I assumed that he was probably never like legally in the States because he, I don't know, maybe he was, but maybe he had a green card. I don't know what the story was, but I think that it was like rescinded and like he was just deported to Ukraine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I remember like a month or two later, like I literally just like, I'm opening the door and like to like leave the office and like it's him. And he's like, yo, can I get that job? Like, I really need that job. I'm like, you know, like I didn't remember like if I talked to him then, or it wasn't, I didn't see him. It was like the HR chick saw him. And I mean, we literally just like, I mean, sorry, he was arrested like 10 times.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like a one time thing, but then it's exactly. like a 10 time thing. It's yeah. like, it's a.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you see Frey Caviar in 5 years? I mean,
good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. I think in 5 years, Frey Caviar, what I would love to see, and like you could answer this in like your way too, is definitely just making sure the quality of the content that we put out is like cream of the crop. I really want to focus on the quality. I know that sometimes it hasn't been there, and that's something that is always on my mind. Making sure that we have probably more, maybe a couple more writers. I don't know. Like, I want to keep it lean, the operation lean. I don't want to grow it like huge. I want to probably have like max like 10 people all like working distinct roles. And I think fixating on just providing like content that's a little bit unique and different, but also interesting for people in the freight world. And making sure that, you know, we always like serve our audience. At the end of the day, like we have nothing without our audience. That's how we monetize things. That's how we're able to make money.
We have so many people that come up to us at these events and say, to my honest surprise, and it's so nice to hear, although on the newsletter side, it's majority of this, you know, work is on your end, but like somebody coming up to you and saying like, out of, you know, there's so many newsletters out there, but this, for like Freight Caviar is the only one that I subscribe to. And this is the only one that I actually read in the morning. And it just actually, like when I get up, you know, early in the morning, I'm like, okay, well, at least somebody's actually really, you know, really wants to be reading this stuff. So yeah, sure. I'll, you know, put in the time to do it. So, and I mean that in a way of like, I find the content interesting, but like, you know, I can build something just like the old school tech problems. Like if I find the tech problem really interesting to be solved, it doesn't mean that other people are going to want it, you know? So,
yeah. I think to that point though, is like, if you find something interesting, like you will find other people that are interested in it, but it's like, is it sustainable? First
and
of all,
how many?
And like, how can you find them? Where can you find them?
Yeah, that's true.
Like once you have those people, it's a lot easier. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Definitely. Like if you had like thousands of people that were like already interested in your product, then you'd be like, okay, like this
it's a network effect at that point. You know?
Yeah. So definitely.
Kind of. It's more so at least just a megaphone that you have. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, you don't have that megaphone in the beginning, but
yeah.
In 5 years, I mean, quality for sure, right? Like. There. I think there's a lot of content opportunity that we've talked about in the past, but quality for sure. And you know, at least for us, we're not, except for maybe like the occasion when there's like some real big breaking story, then we'll say if we find out something that will break the news. But it's not like the main focus for us, and people seemingly actually. You know, at least our audience likes that we focus on kind of finding really interesting tidbits of information that people maybe weren't ever aware of on freight. And it's not exactly like today's news or yesterday's news per se, but it was, you know, a culmination of facts and things that have happened maybe over the last couple of years, some trend that we found, whatever it is. And so at the end of the day, it's kind of like a research. Essentially we do research right on majority of the content that we put out into the newsletter and we compile, you know, stories. And from my understanding, we don't even really take a stance on a lot of this stuff. Like it's not really opinionated at all. Really.
Sometimes I've taken some stances and I've learned the hard way that
sometimes
it's best just to stay non-opinionated. Just provide the facts. Like, it's kind of like the Wall Street Journal, Sana. I really like the Wall Street Journal. It's like, just provide the facts. Like, there's no need to, like, people can make their own opinion.
Yeah, things, exactly. You know? Like, it's how I like to read news, just to begin with.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's like the way I like to read news too. But I've made so many mistakes, like running Freight Caviar throughout the years. And like, I've learned from them the hard way. Sometimes it's better not to learn through your own mistakes. It's better to learn through others' mistakes. But at the end of the day, like, I wouldn't be here without them. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely important to say. Like, we have made mistakes at Freight Caviar for sure.
Yeah.
We've had some backlash, but we've learned from that, you know, and we always want to make sure that, like, at the end of the day, like, well, first of all, reputation is everything. So we don't want to, like, we want to make sure that we're reputable
and higher integrity. So that's important. I mean, just like the two of us, we both come from high integrity families, right? Like, like, we were raised that way, and that's, but at the end of the day, we are, you know, we find ourselves in this kind of, let's call it conundrum of like, do we keep it plain? Cause it would be plain, right? Versus do we try to figure out a way to make this entertaining? Because that's like our audience actually wants. It's not like we're pushing something to them.
It has to be entertaining.
It has to be entertaining because otherwise they're gonna, you know, they're not gonna want to read this because it's gonna be basically like another regular normal thing that feels boring to them throughout their day. And so in the mornings when they read this newsletter, listen to our podcast, it's gotta have some, it's gotta be entertainment. Yeah. So that's that balance, a tricky balance, really.
For sure. It is a tricky balance, but so, this was fun.
This was great.
If you're listening and you're not subscribed to our newsletter, check it out. FreightCaviar.com. If you're looking for shippers,
check out shipperscrm.com.
Yeah. You could also look up findshippersfast.com. That's another domain we own directs you to ShippersCRM.
Yeah. Maybe we own a little bit too many domains, but findshippersfast.com was a good one.
Great. Yeah. Awesome.
So
good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for tuning in. Cool. That was good.
Thanks for tuning in to the Daily Freight Caviar podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, or if you didn't, leave a review. Let me know what you think. I appreciate any feedback. If you'd like to have more Freight Caviar content, go to freightcaviar.com and subscribe to my email newsletter.